This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. If you ever wonder about the power of photojournalism, look at Somalia. Americans supported military intervention there in part because they were so moved by the pictures of famine victims. Some of the most powerful pictures I've seen from Somalia were taken by my guest, James Noctwe. The New York Times Magazine published them in a photo essay last month. One picture showed an emaciated, dead body on a dirty linoleum floor. Two men are preparing the body for burial by washing it with water from a rusty kettle. The corpse's eyes are open and seem to be looking blankly into the camera. For about a decade, James Noctwe has been putting himself in harm's way to take pictures. He's photographed conflicts in Central America, Lebanon, the Philippines, Korea, Sri Lanka, Israel's occupied territories, and Northern Ireland. He spent most of last year in South Africa. He's a three-time winner of the Robert Capa Gold Medal, honoring photographic reporting from abroad, requiring exceptional courage and enterprise. I asked him why he went to Somalia.
The first big news barrage had already happened by the time I was able to go, and I thought, well, maybe I should just send a check to one of the relief organizations. And somehow that didn't seem to be the proper response. It seemed to be a little distant, and I realized that I'm a photographer and I get involved in the world through my work, and that is how I should make my contribution, so that with or without an assignment from a magazine, I felt compelled to go there and become involved as a photographer and let my pictures speak however they might and through whatever channels they might find. So I, on my own, went there.
Another photograph I just want to try to describe. It's of a woman being transported to a hospital to a feeding center. She's in a wheelbarrow.
Yes.
And she looks near death because she's very emaciated. Her hand is being held palm up, almost as if she was asking for something, although I doubt that she was. But there's something so disturbing about seeing a person in a wheelbarrow that looks pretty filthy, as if it were used not too long ago to transport dirt or fruit or something, you know, but something that left it dirty, and it doesn't look like a person belongs in there. It's like the person has been very objectified by being in there. There's also something very otherworldly about the photo. I think that's in part because the woman is so sick. I think it's in part because of the context of her being in a wheelbarrow. And I think it's in part because of the lighting that you got. Tell me about taking that photograph.
Well, there is something strange about seeing a human being transported in a wheelbarrow, because it's not what wheelbarrows are for. And I think it underlines the desperation of that situation. And perhaps that's what, you know, viewers sense when they look at it. And there's an added element of horror, not only concerning her physical state, but the means of transporting her itself that underlines that horror. The people there had so few resources of any kind that this wheelbarrow happened to have been donated by UNICEF, I suppose, as part of one of their development projects, perhaps to help them dig irrigation ditches or whatever. And the situation had turned so bad that these implements that had been donated by foreign relief agencies were now being used to transport people.
Why did you take these pictures in black and white?
It was my choice. The fact that I went without any assignment or without any backing from a publication meant that I was very free to choose whatever I wanted to do outside of the requirements of any specific publication. And I just felt that black and white would distill the essence of this tragedy in a more powerful way than color might. That color might be a bit distracting, whereas black and white would, I think, help viewers to really concentrate on the essence of the story, which was, as far as I was concerned, human suffering.
I think the pictures in print and the images we saw on TV from Somalia had a huge effect in mobilizing American support for intervention there. Did Somalia seem to you like a triumph of photojournalism?
I think that in a way it was, and in another way it wasn't, not only for photojournalism, but just for the press as a whole, which includes photography, television, print, and radio. I think that the contribution made by all of the press was instrumental in getting aid there in the first place, and then in prompting President Bush and sending troops. I think in that sense, it really highlights the fact that the press can and does have an immediate effect on different situations in the world. I think that where it didn't fulfill its full potential is the fact that I think the coverage came too late, and that the troops were sent too late, and that most of the aid was sent too late. I think outside of the ICRC, which was there very early on, and I think trying to make people aware of what was going on, everyone else was just too late. A lot more lives could have been saved. The situation could have been ameliorated much sooner.
I wonder if you worry about oversaturation, if you worry that there's a point where viewers start to look at starving people and think, well, oh, we saw that already.
I don't believe in that. I think that people, we have all seen starving people. I mean, for years and years, we've been seeing starvation in Africa. And every time the press mobilizes, there's a response from the public. I think that the so-called compassion fatigue is, there may be some truth to it, but I think it's really selling people short, because if people are presented with a situation like that, it seems to me they always respond. And I think it's just human nature, and that it's it's a reflection of the best in human nature, and we should never forget that. That if there's a tragedy in the world that needs attention, that needs the help of the world community, we cannot say, oh, let's not do it because people won't care. We have to believe that people will care, and I think that time and time again it's been proven that people do care and they will respond.
Photojournalist James Noctway is my guest. When you went to Somalia, you went there freelance. You didn't have an institution behind you.
Right.
What are the hazards of going into a situation like that without, you know, a set of editors and so on back home to back you up?
Right. There are certainly hazards involved in that. If you get hurt, which could have happened there, I mean, it's definitely a dangerous situation and unpredictable, and anything can happen to someone who goes there. You're on your own. I mean, there's no one to, you know, pay for a medevac. There's no one to pay your health insurance or to look after you. You're basically on your own, and you're at your own risk. And just the I mean, that's probably the greatest risk involved. Another risk is just of a lesser degree, but somewhat important, is the financial risk. You have to go into your own bank account, you have to buy your plane ticket, and you have to pay for all your expenses, which in this case were quite sizable, without ever having an assurance that it's going to come back to you. Yeah, I mean, you're risking your own financial resources and your own time and your own health.
Well, I know you got sick in Somalia. What happened to you, and when did you start realizing that you were sick?
Well, I made two trips to Somalia. The pictures which were published in the New York Times were made in late September and early October, and on that trip I got an amoebic parasite, which wasn't that difficult to deal with, and I've gotten them before in different parts of the world. be hazardous, but if it's caught in time, it can be dealt with. It's not very pleasant, but it can be dealt with and eliminated. I made another trip in November for a French newspaper, and I also got a parasite on that trip, but much more devastating was a case of dengue fever, which landed me in the hospital for 5 days, and from which I'm still feeling the effects. It's a kind of virus that's transmitted by a mosquito. It's not contagious, and it does not recur, but while you have it, it's very devastating, extremely painful, and I'm still recovering from that.
Do you have any idea why you do what you do, why you travel from one war to another, from one famine to another, taking pictures?
I think at this point, what becomes the enduring reason for it is to be of use. As I was saying earlier in regard to what is called compassion fatigue, I think that people will respond to the press. They'll respond to images. They'll respond to television broadcasts. If it's brought to them in a strong and compassionate way, and I just think that's what my job has become. I think earlier in anyone's career, a lot of other factors come into play, you know, just your natural curiosity, which I think is a prerequisite for being a journalist in the first place. In my case, I wanted to test myself in certain situations. I just wanted to see what things were. I wanted to educate myself. And all of those are important, much more important earlier on, and they kind of wear away. And in the end, the enduring reason and really what's left for me is just wanting to be useful.
My guest is photojournalist James Noctway. His photo essay on Somalia was published last month in the New York Times Magazine. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. Photojournalist James Noctway is my guest. I want to go back to a photo from 1984 that's printed in your book, Deeds of War. And this is from the San Miguel province in El Salvador. There were troops that were ambushed by rebels, and there were casualties waiting for an evacuation helicopter. In the foreground, a father is shielding his wounded young daughter with his own body. She was probably wounded in the crossfire. It's not only a very moving shot, it's a beautifully composed shot. I'm wondering where you were when you took this, what you were doing there, and where were you during the fighting that seemed to have happened just minutes before the photo was taken?
I had joined an army patrol the night before, and I just walked with them in the mountains. They were looking for rebels to make contact with the rebels, and at the very break of dawn, this patrol was ambushed, and I was with them when they got ambushed. And bullets were hitting the ground at my feet, along with the soldiers, and I survived the first few minutes and found cover, and then just operated, photographing the soldiers as they fought and maneuvered, and eventually got to a point which had been designated a landing zone to take away the wounded, and this campesino father and child were there, waiting to be picked up by a helicopter along with some wounded soldiers. And shots continued to be fired, and at one point the man shielded his daughter with his own body. And to me, this was an act of heroism. I mean, a man was willing to sacrifice himself for his child, and it's perhaps what any father would do for his child. And here was this anonymous campesino, I think, performing an act of heroism, and I was there to record it. And I think that's really a lot of what happens in the world are these tremendously heroic acts performed by ordinary people in extraordinary circumstances. And I think that in war, it's a situation where things happen that don't happen anywhere else. And I guess those are the kind of things I try to record. Those are the human moments that are of most interest to me.
What is the greatest risk you've ever taken for any one picture?
I don't know if I can answer that exactly that way. I think that there have been many situations where I've been at risk, and that you know, members of the press in general put themselves at risk. I mean, if you just go to a war zone, you're at risk because it's so unpredictable. And people with a lot more experience at war and with a lot more training at war are getting killed and wounded all around you. It doesn't take you very long to understand that it can just as well be happening to you. And I think it's a decision that you really have to come to grips with and be at peace with very early on, because you never want to find yourself in a situation and go, why did I do this? I think you should know why you're doing it before you go and have that very clear in your mind, because that's what gets you through. That's enables you to do your job if you have a sense of why you're there. I think that carries you through all the obstacles.
When you say that you have to be at peace with this, do you go so far before an assignment to say to yourself, getting these pictures is worth losing my life if necessary?
I think you have to understand that that can happen to you. I think you're a fool if you go to a war and don't realize that you can be killed or very badly injured, that your life can be changed very dramatically in a split second. If you go into a war without realizing that, you're really being foolish, and you probably shouldn't go.
Have you found that you were in some places where your work as a photojournalist has been really respected, and other places where you've been considered the enemy, where you've become a target?
I think that journalists are easy targets. First of all, we don't carry weapons, and we, especially people involved with cameras, either video or still cameras, are kind of, you know, looking through their camera, and they're not seeing what's behind them, and they're very concentrated on making an image, and therefore very vulnerable to, you know, either being attacked by rioters or being shot, because we are intent on using our cameras. So we're easy targets.
Your book of photographs from 1989 is dedicated in part for all those who helped a stranger and asked for nothing in return. I imagine you're referring to a lot of people who helped you and asked for nothing in return. Can you tell us about one of those people and one of the things that they did for you?
In 1986, I went to do a story in the Jaffna Peninsula of Sri Lanka about the Tamils and what was happening between the Tamils and the Sinhalese in Sri Lanka. And I got caught in an ambush, I guess. It was an attack on the rebel base I was in. And it was clear to me that we were surrounded and that this location was going to be overtaken, and that I should do my best to get out of there. So I made an escape and hid out nearby in someone's house. And these people didn't know me. I mean, I was the only foreigner on all of Jaffna Peninsula, and I must have looked very strange to them, showing up in the middle of the night during a big battle. And they must have been very frightened in the first place that the battle was taking place and that I was knocking on their door in the middle of the night in the second place. And they took me in and allowed me to stay there and take refuge in their house. I suppose not knowing what repercussions might come down on them because of it, but they were generous enough to take in a stranger and they were obviously going to get nothing out of it. And I mean, things like that have happened many times, and I guess it was just my way of, you know, paying my respects to those very brave and generous people.
Do you envision a time when you'd want to stop doing what you're doing?
I don't. No, not really. I mean, I realize that sooner or later that day might come, but it hasn't come yet. I feel that at this point, I'm very experienced. I know how to go about doing what I do, and I feel that because of that, I'm probably more useful now than I ever was, and that there's really no reason to stop. But on the contrary, there's every reason to continue.
Do you think you could live in the United States and be happy here now?
You mean to just not travel anymore?
Yeah, to not travel anymore. And frankly, do you think you'd be happy living in a place that wasn't at war?
I do live here.
But you're not home very much.
No, I'm not.
But I mean, you've become so accustomed to being in the middle of catastrophe.
Yeah. Well, I don't think I'm addicted to it. I think I do it for a reason. I don't particularly like it. In fact, part of me didn't want to go to Somalia at all because I knew I had an idea what I was going to see, and I didn't particularly want to subject myself to it. I didn't want to face the danger and the risk of sickness and the discomfort that I knew was there. I know enough about it now. I know exactly what I'm going to face, and part of me just didn't want to deal with it at all. And I think my better self overcame that, and I went and did my job. But I'm not addicted to those situations. I don't even particularly like them, but I feel a certain compulsion to communicate those situations.
Well, I wish you very good luck, and I thank you for taking out a little bit of time to talk with us.
Thank you.
James Nachtway. Some of his pictures are published in his 1989 book, Deeds of War. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.